53. You know I can't let you slide through my hands. Rydell knew that sound, a subsonic projectile through a silencer that slowed it even more, draining off the expanding gases of the ignited charge, and still the muzzle velocity would be right up there, and the impact, where it was localized. He knew this through the pain in his side, which felt like a white-hot axe blade between his ribs. He knew it through his shock. He was literally in shock in a number of ways, at discovering Chevette, this version of Chevette with really different hair, more the way he'd always wished she'd wear it. He knew it in the dark that followed the report, the dark that followed the death, he was pretty sure, of whoever the man was who'd gone after Chevette, the man he'd decked, the man who'd gotten up and it felt like driven Rydell's broken rib halfway through his diaphragm. He knew it, and he held on to it, for the very specific reason that it meant the scarf was a trained professional, and not just some espontaneo in a bar. Rydell knew, in those first instants of darkness, that he had a chance. As long as the scarf was a pro, he had a chance. A drunk, a crazy, an ordinary perp, in a pitch-dark bar, that was a crapshoot. A pro would move to minimize the random factor, which was considerable by the sound of it, the remaining crowd, and maybe Chevette as well, screaming and heaving and struggling to get out the door. That was bad, Rydell knew, and easily fatal. He'd been a square badge at concerts and had seen bodies peeled off crowd barriers. He stood his ground, nursing the pain in his side as best he could, and waited for the scarf to make a move. Where was Retoé? She should have shown up in the dark like a movie marquee, but no. And zooming past Rydell's shoulder toward where he'd last seen the scarf, there she was, more comet than pixie, and casting serious light. She circled the scarf's head twice, fast, and Rydell saw him bat at her with the gun. Just a ball of silver light, moving fast enough to leave trails on Rydell's retina. The scarf ducked as she shot straight in at his eyes. He spun and ran to the left. Rydell watched as the light expanded slightly to whiz like cold, pale ball lightning around the perimeter of the dark bar, people moaning and gasping, screaming as she shot past. Past the struggling knot at the door, where several lay unconscious on the floor, and still no sign of Chevette. But then the ray sphere swung in and down, and Rydell spotted Chevette on her hands and knees, crawling in the direction of the door. He ran over to her as best he could, his side feeling like it was about to split, bent, grabbed her, pulled her up. She started to struggle. "It's me," he said, feeling the complete unreality of seeing her again, here, this way. "Rydell." "What the fuck are you doing here, Rydell?" "Getting out." The blue flash and the nail gun fwat were simultaneous, but it seemed to Rydell that the flick of the slug past his head preceded it. In immediate reply, one tight white ball of light after another was hurled past him from behind, from the projector, he realized, and likely straight into the scarf's eyes. He grabbed Chevette under the arm and hustled her across the floor, adrenaline flooding the pain in his side. The stream of projected light behind him was just enough to show him the wall to the right of the door. He hoped it was plywood and none too thick, as he pulled the switchblade from his pocket, popped it, and drove the blade in overhand just at eye level. It punched through, up to the handle, and he yanked it sideways and down, hearing an odd little sizzle of parting wood fiber. He made it down to waist height, twisted it back to the left, and three-quarters of the way up the other side, before he heard the glass-like tink of the ceramic snapping. "Kick! Here!" he said, striking the center of his cutout with the stub of the blade. "Brace up against me! Kick!" And she did. She could kick like a mule, Chevette. The section gave way with her second try, and he was boosting her up and through, trying not to scream at the pain. He was never sure how he made it through himself, but he did, expecting any second one of those subsonics would find him. There were people unconscious outside the door, and other people kneeling trying to help them. "This way," he said, starting to limp in the direction of the ramp and the Lucky Dragon. But she wasn't with him. He swung around, saw her headed in the opposite direction. Chevette! He went after her, but she didn't slow down. Chevette! She turned, her right eye swelling, bruised, swimming with tears, the left wide and gray and crazy now, as if she saw him but didn't register who it was she saw. Rydell? And all this time he'd thought about her, remembered her. Having her there in front of him was something completely different. Her long straight nose, the line of her jaw, the way he knew her lips looked in profile. "It's okay," he said, which was absolutely all he could think of to say. "It's not a dream?" "No," he said. "They shot Carson. Somebody shot him. I saw somebody shoot him." "Who was he? Why'd he hit you?" "He was..." She broke off, her front teeth pressing into her lower lip. "Somebody I lived with, in L.A. "Huh," Rydell said, all he could manage around the idea that the scarf had just shot Chevette's new boyfriend. "I mean, I wasn't with him, not now. He was following me, but... Jesus, Rydell, why'd that guy... just walked up and shot him?" "Because he was going after me," Rydell thought. "Because he wanted to wail on me, and I'm supposed to be theirs." But Rydell didn't say that. "The guy with the gun," he said instead. "He'll be looking for me. He's not alone. That means you don't want to be with me when he finds me."
"Why is he looking for you?"
"Because I've got something." But he didn't. He'd left the projector in the bar.
"You were looking for me back there?"
"I've been looking for you since you walked out. I've been working up and down the face of the waking world every last day with a tiny little comb looking for you, and each day shook out empty, never, never you." And he heard in memory the sound those rocks made, punching into the polymer behind the Lucky Dragon on Sunset. Pointless. Pointless.
"No.
I'm working. Private investigation. For a man named Laney." She didn't believe him.
"Carson followed me up here. I didn't want to be with him. Now you. What is this?"
"Laney says it's the end of the world."
"I'm just here, Chevette. You're just here. I gotta go now."
"Where?"
"Back in the bar. I left something. It's important." "Don't go back there."
"I have to."
"Rydell," she began, starting to shake. You're...
And looked down at her open hands, the palms, dark with something. And he saw that it was blood, and knew that it would be the boyfriend's, that she'd crawled through that. She started to sob, and wiped her palms down her black jeans, trying to get it off.
"Mr. Rydell?" The man with the tonto, carrying Rydell's duffel in the crook of his arm as though it were a baby. "Mr. Rydell, I don't think it would be advisable for you to attempt to leave the bridge. A watch has almost certainly been posted, and they will shoot you rather than permit the possibility of your escape." The pallid glare of the fluorescence chained overhead winked in the round lenses. This lean and concise man with perfectly blank, perfectly circular absences where eyes should be. "Are you with this young woman?"
"Yes," Rydell said.
"We must start toward Oakland," the man said, handing Rydell the duffel, the solid weight of the projector. Rydell hoped he'd gotten the power cable as well. "Otherwise they will slip past and cut us off."
Rydell turned to Chevette.
"Maybe they didn't see us together. You should just go."
"I wouldn't advise that," the man said. "I saw you together. They likely did as well."
Chevette looked up at Rydell.
"Every time you come into my life, Rydell, I wind up in..."
She made a face.
"Shit,"
Rydell finished for her.